Hey, this is D Knight.
This is Carol.
This is Ty.
And you're listening to the Pardon the Interaction podcast, where, you know, the front of the insurrectionists, they're going to hell and they're going to jail. And we've got the chief insurrectionist on trial as we speak, though sadly not for the insurrection itself. I guess we'll have to hold off on that until the Supreme Court decides whether or not presidents have, immunity for trying to overthrow the government and have their political opponents assassinated. But anyway, it is, week four of this criminal trial that Trump is facing in New York, thanks to the falsification of business records in an attempt to pay off a porn star to cover up an affair right before the 2016 election, commonly referred to as the hush money trial. I feel like it's at least a number of people have gotten around to calling it something slightly more accurate, an election interference trial.
Yes. And Tristan Snell is always pointing that out. And that is a great point, because when you say hush money, it lessens the gravity of these charges and what the case is actually really about. Because at the end of the day, Stormy Daniels' testimony, it was the bookkeeper, the accountant, like who for 40 years like worked for the Trump organization, which has set a clear pattern of their duplicity and just how detailed the fraud was. And I think as soon as people say hush money, and they're like, oh, what's the big deal? Like, that's the first thing. And then they just tune out and they dismiss it without really like listening or paying attention. So
hush money pursuant to election interference.
Yeah, hush money definitely does like lessen the sting of what it actually was. And, you know, I've said this before.
The incriminating part out loud.
Wait, what? I'm sorry. You froze up. What happened?
I did. I said, why do you have to say the incriminating part out loud? That just makes us sound bad.
Fair enough. Calling it hush money just kind of typically lessens the regard of what this is actually about. And I've said this before. Yeah. It's if you think about it, if Trump hadn't committed this crime of having Stormy McDaniels paid off and having the payments covered up, it just given the circumstances in 2016, I know a lot's changed since then. Like, after years of being pot committed, like the MAGAs, they've just decided to stick with him. But it was fraught close to the election. Yeah. They were really thinking about pulling Trump off the ticket and everything. And so if this had come out, this would probably have been the straw that cost Trump the election. Just given that the small margin which he won by, again, he lost by 3 million votes, but he won a couple of swing states by a handful of thousands that gave him the Electoral College victory. And this story would have probably flipped those swing states. But we had Stormy Daniels testify last week, and I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast by now, you've already you're probably disgusted hearing about Stormy Daniels' testimony, so we probably won't go super in-depth there. But just a couple of noteworthy things about how Stormy ended up testifying about the lurid details of their encounter or her encounter with Trump is basically because Trump's defense counsel took the position that Stormy Daniels was a liar and the encounter never actually happened. So that kind of opened the door for the prosecution to go into some realms. Yes, that
was a nice invitation to prove that it did happen. Huh?
That was a mistake.
The trial wasn't about the trial. That wasn't, part of the fact finding. That wasn't relevant necessarily.
No, they could have stipulated to Stormy Daniels' account of the interaction, and that would have closed off her testimony about a lot of the specifics of that night. But just a couple things real quick. What I found most disturbing is just that, we've all seen Stormy Daniels over the past few years, and we know she's handled just numerous obstacles in such a depth fashion. She's handled these lawyers here. She's handled her former lawyer was a sleaze bag. She's handled the press. She's handled these talk show hosts. Obviously, she's been a stripper before. So she's handled the stage at these strip clubs. She's been an adult film star. She's handled these porn sets, which we know to be, there's a wide, varied experience in the porn industry. And she's handled all of that shit without missing a beat. And then she couldn't maneuver her way through a single, you know, couple hours long encounter with Donald Trump without being creeped the fuck out. And I think
that was really powerful. Like, I don't, sex work is work and I don't shame it. However, the perception by a lot of people is that, oh, that's a sleazy business. In my mind, she is the least sleazy of any of the people involved in this case that are around him and have been involved with Trump. And I do think that she has handled, when you say like handled herself, she has. But I think that that comes from her experience navigating herself in the adult industry, because she has dealt with predators. She has dealt with liars. She has dealt with people who have tried to take advantage of her. And she is adept at standing her ground and not being marginalized by the people that want to make her feel shame because of her profession.
Right.
You know?
Again, and that just goes back to the point that with all of that and with her being able to navigate all of that, even she was in Donald Trump's hotel room like, how the fuck did I get myself into this? This is crazy. And then, you know, Trump is all creepy and shit. So this is the other thing that I wanted to talk about really quickly is that, you know, typically this was portrayed like Trump was some suave, debonair, ladies man type arrangement. And then, you know, he wooed Stormy Daniels into bed, but really he pulled the old surprise, I have a dick. If you don't know what that is, I mean, I'm sure, you know, women out there, if you've dated some dudes. No, actually, I guess a better example, it'd be like you meet a guy and he's all, you know, it's kind of platonic and it's very friendly and he never really kind of hits on you or makes a pass at you or makes it like seem as though it's some sort of any kind of allusions towards a sexual relationship. And then the second you get alone, or maybe you had a boyfriend, the second you dump your boyfriend, he sends you a dick pic out of the blue with no context. And you're like, what the fuck? That's the surprise, I have a dick. So Trump invited her out to dinner. She gets to the hotel room. He's in his fucking pajama robe or something, like some
satin.
Some old Hugh Hefner type shit. And she's like, bro, get the fuck out of there. Put on some clothes. And then he's like, all right. And he gets dressed and they sit down and talk and have a drink or whatever. And she's like, damn, where's dinner? And he's like, all right, we'll get there. And then the next thing you know, he's on top of her. That's the surprise, I have a dick, but the creepy, rapey version. Now, she said, she has said specifically that it was consensual in the sense that she didn't say no. But it does feel very predator-like behavior where, you know, you've got the bodyguard outside the door and she tried to leave and then you cut her off. And then, you know, there's this power dynamic where, you know, she's thinking that this conversation and this interaction is about some career prospects. And then the next thing, you know, you're on top of her and you don't even have the courtesy to put on a fucking condom. But yeah, that's some creepy behavior, and that she was made so uncomfortable by that after the fact just kind of goes back to just what a terrible, fucking disgusting person Trump is. Like, you grossed out a fucking porn star, you did something wrong.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there are so many, take her profession, whatever, she's a woman. And like you said, throwing the power dynamic in there. It's one thing if you're like, it's the director of porn set or whatever, but this is
I thought you were gonna say Miramax.
No, Weinstein. No, but there are so many women that can relate to that, being in that type of position. And so many women, which is why so many sexual assaults go unreported, because at the end of the day, like you said, it was technically consensual because I didn't say no. But
did she even feel like she had the freedom to say no?
Exactly. That's exactly.
And
exactly.
Because that line was so blurred. Yeah. Maybe you can't say it was sexual assault or rape, but it feels rapey.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, it's just.
But again, I mean, it was his hubris that brought those facts into play in the trial. Like, all we needed to know was that the payment, if he admitted to the payments, I don't know, we wouldn't have to hash it out in excruciating detail if he didn't. And whatever.
Yeah. Oh, he just, they could have stipulated that the encounter happened. And that would have been a majority of her testimony gone. And instead, it just made look Trump weak and disgusting. Cause I know it was played up to be like, oh, you know, the guys will love that I, you know, was out here, you know, knocking them down, banging a porn star or whatever. But this just made it seem kind of, it seems so not only gross, but just kind of impotent. It's like, and you 2 minutes, like you couldn't do better than that. And you didn't even make sure she enjoyed it. It's all bad. But so moving on, we had Michael Cohen testify over the last couple of days here this week. And it was rather extraordinary in the sense that prosecutors did a very good job previously with all of the other witnesses and all of the other evidence entered into the trial of painting out this picture and laying the groundwork and framing all of this testimony from Michael Cohen for the jury, so that while he is still a key witness, he's now not necessarily the linchpin. He's just there to connect the dots of everything that happened prior and to fill in a few holes here and there that absolutely nailed Trump. And then also, like, there's this idea that if you could discredit Cohen as the defense counsel, you could get Trump off. But that's extraordinarily, it's near impossible to do, because basically you would have to disbelieve all of that testimony from the other witnesses in order to look at Cohen's testimony and say, this isn't the case, and not find Trump guilty beyond a reasonable doubt on these counts of falsifying these documents. But
not only that, but like when the bookkeeper, when she testified, it was very obvious that she still was kind of was enamored with Trump. Like, she was in his corner. So as I had said on previous times, that it's easy to try to paint Stormy and Michael Cohen as, oh, they're just out to get Trump, they have an axe to grind, etc. And I can see how people would be on the fence with that. But the other witnesses, there was none of that. Like, there wasn't. Like, Hope Hicks, there wasn't that with her. There wasn't. No. So their testimony, and I think they did a great job. Yes, we call it the hush money trial, but Stormy Daniels is just a cog in the wheel of the grand scheme of what Trump was trying to cover up and the fraud.
Yeah, she just happened to be this one particular specific instance of these falsification of documents. But what they showed previously was that Trump was engaged in a pattern of behavior of trying to cover up these negative stories before the election, which David Pecker did a fantastic job of explaining how that worked. But we'll get to some of the specifics of Michael Cohen's testimony. And I mean, if you want to sum it up, we can cut the podcast off right after this, because this was the nail in the coffin here. It was, you know, Michael Cohen told Trump about Stormy Daniels shopping her story in the middle of 2016, and Trump instructed him to take care of it. It's pretty open and shut after that. All of the specific details are just in line with that bit of a story. But first of all, what was really insane is, so Monday and Tuesday, of course, you know, as Michael Cohen said to testify specifically about Trump, and given that Cohen's already been to jail for these crimes when he was charged by the Department of Justice, you would think that Trump would be alert and focused. But no, even in this instance, he couldn't help himself. Motherfucker's still falling asleep every day. Like, what is going on? Like, how do you not stay awake for the dude that you know went to jail already that's about to send you to jail? It's crazy.
Especially since he said it was freezing in there. Like,
I am standing by my belief that his attorneys are slipping him some Benadryl or some melatonin or something. So that
they're trying to keep him from being wild
after court, whatever. But they're like, please don't aggravate the judge. I'm not trying to be disbarred. Just.
And that's hilarious. So they got him drugged so he's not acting crazy out here. You know, I think it might be the opposite, actually. I think he might take some performance enhancing drugs on the side. And they're like, you got to chill out with that when we go to court. But yeah, just.
And then he's crashing because he was up all night.
Right.
Deja vu. On Adderall.
Yeah. So deja vu.
I'm pretty sure we said this exact, same conversation.
We might have. I don't know. But
Let's listen.
He's still falling asleep, though. And that's what's crazy. He's been falling asleep in court every day of the fucking trial since the beginning of it. Like, we kind of laughed it off at first. It's like, oh, it's funny. He fell asleep. Well, now he's doing it every day and it's kind of normal. And like, how do we let that become normal? Because this is insane. And then, like, I can only imagine what it must be like being a juror sitting in this trial. And you're like focused on every detail of every individual's testimony. And then you look over and you see Trump there and he's like, what the fuck? So Michael Cohen, first off, started his testimony on Monday talking about how he actually didn't want to be a lawyer when he was growing up. He wanted to work on Wall Street, but his grandmother said that ain't gonna happen, like, quote unquote. And it's just interesting because he said his grandmother was a Holocaust survivor who immigrated to Canada and later on to the United States. And I think that was one of the things that kind of colored Michael Cohen's mea culpa, so to speak, here. It's to some point, you know, I guess after speaking with his family in the midst of all of this, you know, he came around to the side of being pro-democracy because he saw what a danger the Trump is to the United States and to our democracy and some of the experiences that his grandmother probably had. Growing up might have colored that. And I know a lot of people are going to say, you know, fuck Michael Cohen. He's a jackass, you know, all the shit he did. And that's totally fine. I personally, I've got some issues with a lot of the stuff that Michael Cohen did. But I can say of all of the people that we know in the political landscape that were, you know, former Republicans or former Trumpers or, you know, especially from Trump's inner circle, nobody's flipped as hard on Trump as Michael Cohen has. And since he's flipped, he never went back. And not only that, he's been going out of his way every single day to make sure he holds Trump accountable for the things that Trump, well, first of all, the things that he did in Trump's employ, but also the things that Trump has done. And he holds himself accountable. And he'll tell you he's made a lot of mistakes and that he's not the greatest person in the world. But he also paid his dues, did his time, and he's trying to make amends. And like, that's commendable. Like, this shit with, like, you know, Mike Johnson blocking the aid of Ukraine for months, and then he finally lets the vote go to the floor and then gets praise from the media. That's fucking insane. Dude is a clown show. Like, none of those people like that should be getting any kind of praise from the media whatsoever. And not saying, you know, Michael Cohen should be, should have praise heaped upon him, but just again, like, if anyone should be getting praise, it should be this dude. Because,
well, you know, the thing is that Michael Cohen is a private citizen. Michael Johnson owes us. owes us. We are the people that he's supposed to be working for.
Yeah.
So
and he can't meet the lowest the bare possible
minimum war. Of, you know, because we pay your salary. No, that should. But Michael Cohen, he's, you know, what does he really have to gain? You know what I mean? Like, there's no real skin in the game for him except him trying to do his best to right whatever wrongs he did in whatever way he can.
Well, but you know Michael what? Johnson, it's funny you say that because the defense counsel for Trump on cross-examination actually tried to bring up some of these points. Like, you know, what does Michael Cohen have to gain from this? And they were talking about, you know, your podcast, you know, it's got a bunch of downloads. It's like, yeah, you make money off your podcast, right? Yeah. And then they did kind of mess up and make a mistake here where they were talking about the Midas Touch merch store, and they put some of the exhibits from that up, and they were like, hey, is this like the stuff you sell for your podcast? But that wasn't actually Michael Cohen's merch store. That was the Midas. So they got that totally confused. Like, wait, way to miss out on that detail, guys. And it actually kind of made some of the cross-examination look ridiculous that they can't even figure out small details like whose merch store and stuff belonged to. But also, shout out to the Midas Touch guys. But no, Trump is, I mean, Cohen's tried to at least tried to make his amends. Like people like Mike Johnson doing the bare minimum just every rare occasion. It's not even the bare minimum every day. It's like every few months. That they shouldn't get credit for that. But Michael Cohen also talked about how he first began working at the Trump Organization because he was familiar with Don Jr. And Jr. Said that there was an issue at Trump World Tower with the board. And
I don't know if you remember at some point the name Trump carried prestige.
What year is this?
I bet that is true.
1986.
At 96, it might have. I mean, people. It wasn't like.
Nah, we was laughing at
it. It wasn't unanimous contempt.
That is know. True. That
I fear, is very, maybe. Very true. I feel like we were laughing at Oprah. Dude by the. Huh? Oh, Oprah. Yeah. Nah, I feel like we were laughing at Dude by the late 90s, and he had been bankrupt a few times. And then he was never really popular like that in New York. Everybody thought he was a sleazebag, apparently, or New York City, at least from what I hear from locals. And by the 2000s, it was a total dumpster fire. All he really had going for him was the show. And look, we all know reality TV show is not real, but I guess that's not the case for most Americans.
Yeah, I guess it would have had to been like 2005.
Yeah, but Don Jr. got him a job with the Trump Organization. And... you know, Cohen was talking about on the stand how Trump said he liked how he handled this issue with the board. So he asked him to come help on a few other matters and ended up having him come work for Trump full time. And I don't know, once he started working there full time, you know, Cohen said he actually loved working there. And this goes to some of Cohen's credibility here, where he's not totally just trashing his experience with Trump or the Trump Organization, where he was like, actually, it was my dream job. I loved it. I was working at a firm when Trump gave me the nod to come work for him full time. I didn't even go back to my office to collect my shit. Like, that's how dedicated he was to this whole Trump Org thing. So for, you know, Trump to fall out of favor with Michael Cohen, clearly, you know, it had to be an extreme situation for Michael Cohen to have made such a.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because part of the original offer was for payment of money. And as you know, it eventually tapered off and was funneled into a conspiracy for campaign fraud.
Well, you know, Cohen talked about this too. He was like, yeah, I was making a pretty good salary at the Trump Organization, but Cohen had previously made fairly good money, and he'd been in a situation with these taxi medallions, the New York City taxi medallions, where some, you know, an associate of his had owned quite a few of them, but was leaving the country. And he was like, here, man, I'll cut you in on this, you know, half price. So those taxi medallions had made Cohen quite a bit of money. And he'd also invested in some real estate here and there. And once he began working at the Trump Organization, he'd invested in a few properties. So it's not like Cohen was hurting for money at that point anyway. But we'll get to more on that in a bit. And Cohen was clear that he even referred to himself as Trump's fixer. So that kind of lets you know the kind of work Cohen was doing for the Trump Organization.
Oh yeah.
And he said he was never part of the general counsel office at Trump Organization, but he was asked by Trump to take care of, you know, numerous matters regularly. Any issues came up, Cohen was one of the first people that Trump would call.
He's the consigliere.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much. And there was an instance where, you know, law firms.
But I've joked several times about being that. So, like, I mean, he probably knew it was true. He wasn't joking.
And there was an incident where law firms and vendors to Trump University had issues about being paid. And he had, you know, Cohen take care of like something close to 50 vendors that hadn't been paid. Cohen tried to lowball them. And there were a few with like a couple of million dollars left that, you know, he basically cleaned up Trump's mess, where Trump is like refusing to pay people what they're worth. And Cohen lowballed him and took care of most of those. And, you know, Trump approved of Cohen's work. So, I mean, it was a mutually beneficial relationship at that point. And, you know, it won Cohen a lot of favor. And then Cohen talked about some of the ways that Trump kind of finessed his work, his business or whatever, saying that Trump never had an email address because Trump had told Cohen that, quote, emails were like written papers, and he knows too many people who've gone down from using emails that prosecutors can use, which is, I mean, hey, guilty, man, fucking conscience, dog.
Roy Cohn taught him well, man. He taught Trump well, which is why he was always using burners, somebody else's phone.
Oh, man.
Never leaving
No emails, no text messages. Yes, Trump is one of them dudes who is like, I definitely never going to have that wire situation where I'm taking notes on a criminal fucking conspiracy. Unfortunately, when you do so much dirt nonstop for decades, occasionally the people that work for you that engage in taking care of those criminal activities do leave some damning notes. And that is actually what happened in this particular case. There were a few couple of things that
when you have so much evidence against you that it fills your ballrooms. Sorry.
That's a totally different criminal trial, Carol.
Know it is, but he has a reputation and a history for having so much criminal evidence against him that he can't even keep it hidden at all.
Yeah.
It's a different trial.
Case in point, when he had those documents hidden in the bathroom shower, but they were stacked so high that they were like above the shower curtain. Like you could see
above
they were like
the close to above. Like,
that's fucking insane. But yeah, so one
didn't want to leave a paper trail.
One particular instance of a damning paper trail in this case were these handwritten notes by Alan Weisselberg in terms of reimbursing Cohen these payments to Stormy Daniels, where he's like, there's like the number, there's the 130K or whatever, but Weisselberg has to gross it up by double to account for the fact that in order to make Cohen whole, you'd have to account for him paying taxes. And this is one of the things that kind of, I mean, it's again, one of those things that it's the nail in the coffin that proves that these weren't legal fees. They were recorded in the financial documents. And also it appears to be some kind of form of tax evasion where I'm assuming that the Trump organization used these payments to write off their taxes. So, you know, if the election interference doesn't do it for you, there's also the tax fraud.
Very good point.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah. And so Cohen talked about how he first started working for Trump in 2007 and the salary was about $375,000 a year. But that was his base salary. And that during the course
of his median bonus.
Yeah. During the course of his work, he would end up getting a regular bonus. One of the things Cohen was upset about, though, was in 2016, after he did all of this work to cover up these stories and coordinating with Pecker and Howard at AMI and paying off Stormy Daniels out of his own pocket after Trump won the election, he cut Michael Cohen's bonus, which is just some fucked up shit to do. Like, this dude is like, Trump's got a habit of screwing over.
You don't piss off your fixer,
right? Exactly. Exactly.
But I guess you got a new fixer
now that you're done.
Okay.
Like, what did Trump think was going to happen? Like, come on, man.
And then, the crazy part is Cohen, while he was mad, was still loyal to Trump all the way through that, all the way through the first couple of years of the administration, all the way up to even being
going to prison.
Indicted. Yeah. And again, even after he was indicted, Cohen talked about how, you know, he had a conversation with Trump. Trump was like, hey, man, I'm the president. You just hang in there. Don't worry about anything. But it was a conversation with his family where he really decided that he was going to change his ways and try and make amends, because his family was like, hey, you know, aren't you supposed to put us first? Like, how can you keep continuing to go along with this? And I think that was the animus for the Michael Cohen that we all know today, imperfect as he may be. I wouldn't necessarily say that he engages in the same behavior as he once did. And he also talked about some of his conversations with David Pecker, where they use Signal to keep their conversations encrypted, where he was saying, quote, "Sometimes we thought that encryption and not having the event traceable would be beneficial. And this is just more evidence that concealing these conversations and these transactions was important, important in influencing the outcome of the 2016 election." And actually, so Cohen talked about his relationship with David Pecker, and the prosecution asked Cohen if AMI ever paid to suppress stories about Trump before 2015. And Cohen's answer was no. He testified that suppression of the stories that would be damaging to Trump only began after Trump announced his campaign for president. Again, it was just like bomb after bomb after bomb after bomb coming from Michael Cohen. And I think the way he handled himself, the jury's likely going to find a lot of his testimony credible, given the fact that it was constantly, not only was it damning, it was always at every turn backed up by documentation. There were like call logs and text messages and emails and on and on and on at every turn that just corroborated everything Michael Cohen was saying. I think this is going to be the end of Trump's run being an unconvicted felon. I don't think he's going to make it out of this.
You know, say whatever you want about Michael Cohen, you know, what he did, who, and he's very New York. Like, he's kind of crass. He's kind of, but he
got a lot of Long Island asshole in him.
Yeah, but he never comes across to me as fake. Everything that he says, I absolutely believe is true. Like, it is very matter of fact. He lays it out there, but he doesn't.
Wasn't he convicted of lying to Congress?
Here's the thing. So Cohen addressed that.
That was part of his job.
No, I agree that he's like, I do believe him now to some extent, but you're like, he would never lie except to Congress, though.
No, that's not.
I said he's not fake.
No, Michael Cohen addressed that in his testimony, actually, because he would talk about like a regular theme of Cohen's testimony would be, I was doing this for the boss. And that comes up regularly when we talk about a lot of the behaviors Cohen engaged in while he was working for Trump, including lying about, the Mueller investigation to Congress. And he downplayed a lot of things that he probably shouldn't have. And again, this is what Cohen talks about himself regularly. If you listen to any of his podcasts, about all the mistakes he made and how he probably would do it differently at this point. But yeah, the fact that he's a convicted liar. Well, what did he lie about? Some shit that didn't have anything to do with him. You know, it was lies again that helped his boss, just like these, you know, payments to Stormy Daniels. We took out a home equity line of credit to pay her off. And then, like, he didn't have the affair with Stormy Daniels. But yeah, that, again, this is something the defense counsel tried to bring up multiple times to try and discredit Cohen. But and the problem with that also is you can't necessarily make.
If he was such a good lawyer, would he have been falsifying documents with my client? I mean,
yeah, exactly. Right. Like, to some degree, if you throw Cohen under the bus, like, well, Trump was driving it. Right. Or rather, I guess Trump's under there with him. Because it just.
But like, Cohen didn't choose that. They can't bring up anything outside of what was his reasoning. He just decided one day, I'm just going to go up to this woman I never met and I don't know, have nothing to do with, nobody I know knows her, and I'm going to give her this money. I'm going to take out a home equity line to do, like,
right.
People keep and glossing then, over the fact that, who was he working for? Right. Who was he doing it for?
Like, and then you have to explain, well, why did Trump pay him back if this wasn't in Trump's direction? And that's the thing.
Well, like, why did he counsel, pay at all? He never pays anybody.
Well, he didn't.
Unless it was desperate. Unless right. They were desperate.
That's
he wouldn't spend the money.
Well, he didn't want to, and he did his best to delay the payments as long as possible. And Cohen talked about that too.
Yeah, until indefinitely.
Like, yeah, Trump was basically like, wait until after the election, and then I won't have to pay. Because if I win, I'll be in the White House. And if I lose, well, who cares? But we'll get to that in just a moment. But back to trying to throw Cohen under the bus, like Cohen's Trump's right hand guy. So the more you disparage Cohen, the more just disparages Trump if you're the defense counsel. And like, you got to be really careful about that because this jury isn't stupid. Like if you like they can see that play coming a mile away. And people who were there in court today talked about how they were kind of bored with the cross-examination by Trump's defense counsel. But another interesting thing that came up during Cohen's testimony is that in 2011, Trump was thinking about running for president. Cohen took out an article. Well, took an article that said 6% of poll takers thought Trump should run for president, took it to Trump and said, what do you think? And Trump said, it's interesting. We should look into it. And then Trump created a website called shouldtrumprun.com, which he said a lot of people came to, adding that Trump's name recognition was strong because of his reality TV show from The Apprentice. And this just highlights the fact that what happened in 2015 with Trump announcing a run wasn't totally spontaneous. It seems to have been somewhat premeditated, and Trump had had ideas about running for president long before the 2015 election. And if you consider some news outlets that reported on conversations that Trump had with some Russians he had been doing business with over the decades, that Trump had been considering the idea of running for president since the 90s. Just food for thought. Also,
well, that's around when Putin started suggesting it, right? Sorry, that's a different podcast.
Putin's oligarch friends. I don't think Putin necessarily himself engaged in that type of handling, so to speak.
Himself.
But Cohen also testified about discussions ahead of his announcement in 2016, where he was asked if Trump expressed concerns about negative stories about his personal life. And Trump said, quote, you know that when this comes out, meaning the announcement, just be prepared. There's going to be a lot of women coming forward. So Trump acknowledged before any of these stories were ever made public or any of these women ever even came forward, there was a high possibility of women coming forward with these stories. It really does a lot to kind of put into context how guilty Trump appears, because he's made a lot of admissions against his own interest to Michael Cohen here. And this is why, before the trial started, we were all expecting Michael Cohen to be the linchpin witness. And it appears as though if not for David Pecker and Stormy Daniels and Hope Hicks, he probably would have been. But again, they corroborate a lot of the things that Cohen has to say here. And again, this was just nuke after nuke after nuke going off. Just Cohen really hammered a lot of this out.
I like what they did. Like, they had a variety of witnesses in all areas of his inner circle and all with a different allegiance or fealty to him.
Yeah.
On different levels and different times. So while I think people initially, maybe many, just because of lack of information, felt like Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels were going to be the only two witnesses in this trial, like approaching it like, oh, they can be discredited. We're not worried about them. And then you get these other people, but not what they're trying to do, like he's using his squawk boxes on faux news and other places. Those witnesses weren't even relevant. It's like, okay, the bookkeeper for the last 40 years who's worked there as long as Weisselberry has worked for the Trump, organization, right, who went to prison not once, but twice.
It was crazy trying to listen to Trump's lawyers talk about how they weren't prepared to cross-examine a fucking witness who worked for the Trump organization for 40 years. How could you not have been prepared?
When they announced Stormy at the last minute, he goes, they announced the special witness and we haven't had time. It's been called the Hush Money trial.
Yeah,
she has been the focus in the media, even though she's not when it comes to the law. But, and you weren't prepared, but I always look at what people don't say as much as what I do, what they do say. So when he posted on Fraud Social and he's like, oh, the prosecutors called a surprise witness and he didn't say Stormy. He didn't trash her. He didn't put her name, because if he was to say they called Stormy and we didn't have time to prepare, that would have sounded real fucking dumb. Sounded real fucking stupid.
He also has an issue with the gag order where he's on the 10th violation here. And judge is like, bro, you do this one more time. Although that hasn't necessarily stopped him from finding other ways to violate the gag order is, you know, he's got his cult members out there from Congress showing up to the trial now and going out in front of the press.
Did you see them all color coordinated today?
Yes, they are the Spider-Man meme.
Oh, my God.
They're all pointing at each other and they're the same shit. They got the same uniform with the suit and the red tie. Yes, it was.
I could not. And Vivek could not help himself. I'm like, bruh, they're all senators and congressmen and Vivek is just standing there and I'm looking and I go, the fuck is he doing here? Like, what is he doing here? Well,
all the potential vice presidential candidates had to show up in Trump's defense here because
it's basically the apprentice VP. This is it. This is what it is. It's the apprentice VP.
That is so funny. That is it such is. An astute observation. That is exactly what it is. It's the apprentice, except it's real life. It's no longer a reality TV show.